Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Moments ago in the bathroom, experienced my mistake of the week.
Okay, cool.
This week, I just bled through these Teddy Fresh pants, these pink Teddy Fresh pants.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay, because we learn from our mistakes, and I at least...
Can you get it out?
I think so.
Okay, otherwise you could just like splatter them with like red paint.
I'm going to get borax on my way home. Lisa just delivered a panty liner and a tampon to me. What's so frustrating about the type of bleeding that I'm doing right now is that it's not menstrual bleeding. I think it's spotting from my IUD.
Oh.
So a tampon is going to do nothing for me because it's not enough blood.
Yeah.
Like once it's already happened, once the spotting has happened,
yeah.
Like I will be using this panty liner. Thank you. But the tampon, it's like it's too dry in there for me to want to shove any like cotton and involve like, you know.
Yeah.
That up my puss.
Yeah, totally.
Well,
because I mean, tampons, you're not supposed to use tampons anyway.
Right.
Because they're like so sexual.
Yeah.
You know, it makes you a whore.
Yeah, because it, I can't help it that I have a heavy flow and a wide set vagina. How many episodes in a row can we reference Mean Girls?
The limit does not exist, honestly.
Oh my God.
Mistakes.
Ow.
This is why we don't have any Gen Z listeners.
True.
This is how we keep them. This is how we ward them off.
Yeah. Listen, I love being a millennial and I love our millennial listeners, so I'm fine with that.
We're in our Patreon episode this week. We talk about whether we have any teen listeners or not. Like, we don't know because we're pretty sure they would be lying about their age and like the demographics anyway.
Yeah.
And most teenagers on the internet are truly terrifying to have as fans because they turn on you like in a second.
We have
a
really, really, really small percentage of 50 to 60 year olds. And I think it's just both of our moms. It's like 3%.
How dare you out their age?
Our 30-year-old moms.
Yeah. But see, this is, I think, a foolproof plan on how to keep our listenership
totally
to the exact age demographic that we want. Because if we just every episode open with a Mean Girls reference, they're just not, they're just going to turn it off immediately.
Maybe I'll watch that tonight. Ooh. Maybe.
Mean Girls?
Yeah, I was going to watch Pride and Prejudice. I have like a list of comfort movies. Pride and Prejudice is 2005 is my OG comfort film.
Yeah.
But Mean Girls is also one. I just don't watch it that often.
Mean Girls, I feel like the reason I don't watch it as often as like a lot of my other comfort movies is because I have it just memorized.
Yeah, it's also like a social event. I want to watch it with friends.
Yes, because you want to like quote it, laugh about it, have your own little like snippety commentary about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, fully. Yeah,
okay, well, that's a pretty dress.
That is a pretty dress.
Thanks. Kylie Jenner cosplay.
Ew, not Lycra.
Lycra.
Oh, Lycra. Oh, wait, Lycra's that shit that grows in the forest. Never mind. It's that like green stuff that's on all the rocks. I want to come back as Lycra in my next life. Lycra or moss just on a stone or a tree.
For me to just rub my feet
but, like,
all over
with consciousness. I want to have a consciousness, but I want to be like okay with the fact that I am the Lycra or the moss. I want to be conscious, but like...
You want to be Nika, like narrating it to yourself.
I don't know that I want to come back as myself again. Like
we're all set on that.
We're all set on that. Well, I saw actually a psychic when I was 16. She told me this is my last life and that after this I'm going to the next dimension. She said that I've been here since like ancient times. I've told you this, but I haven't told our listeners.
we still got to update the besties.
And that I had
that this is your last life. And it's like when people find out it's the last season of a show they really love.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, but no, it's for the best. We want it to end now on our terms before it gets bad, like Lost.
I just think it's like crazy that I've possibly been here since ancient times, if you believe in reincarnation. And I, in my last life, I got to come back as a mentally ill trans rave girl. Like, what did I, what crazy fucked up horrible thing did I do in like 200 BC that has caused me to live this karmic existence? Like, what did I like commit a genocide? Like, who who did I murder?
Well,
but no, actually, it's so great because being bipolar is a superpower. That's what my bipolar therapist said to me once.
I mean, it kind of is.
Yeah, no,
sometimes.
This
is why another time that I'm grateful we don't have teenage listeners is we can say that, yes, sometimes our mental illnesses are superpowers.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
And I know 14-year-olds don't want to hear things like that.
No, totally. Yeah. Or I can like say that I'm pissed that I came back as a trans person. You know? A 15-year-old would get really upset about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A 15-year-old, like, not even trans person.
Yeah, it would definitely be a straight cis 15-year-old girl who, like, knows one trans person in her high school of, like, 2,000 people.
Yeah.
She really likes Hunter Schafer on Euphoria, so she thinks it's fucked up that I said that.
We're like, why are you watching Euphoria? that's for the adults.
Oh, God. Yeah, I still have not watched the second season. Well, one of the people that I was fucking this week did put on the first episode of Euphoria as we were fucking, and I was like, why is that what you would choose? I have to go. Said my sister was having an emergency and
well,
I had to leave.
Maybe that's why they put it on. Because I like to put on a TV show. My favorite TV show to put on when I want someone to leave.
No, they
after
really.
Fucking.
This was right before we started having sex.
Oh.
Yeah. They put it on. They were like, we should put something on.
Oh. Ooh.
Yeah. And they were like, have you watched Euphoria? And I was like, yeah. That's what you want to put on? Like, I've been fucked with some weird ass shit. I had, what was that weird movie with Nicole Kidman that came out a few years ago?
It's oh, like, the hunting of a...
The hunting of the rabbit or whatever.
No, of a deer.
Of a deer.
Something
someone
like that.
Someone put that on
oh
while
my God,
they,
that is such a fucked up movie.
Yeah, I was like getting my pussy eaten. And I kept like kind of checking out of getting my pussy eaten to be like, what the fuck are we watching?
Did you come right as I chose which kid to kill?
Yeah, I did for sure. Sure. No, I don't think we got that far in the movie.
That movie I watched with my ex-boyfriend and his best friend in theaters, and it was one of those situations where it was like the opening weekend. So when we were like kind of running late to the theater, so the only seats left were in the very, very front. Mm-hmm. And that's already not a great spot in the theater anyway, but yeah, when it's like a particularly like psychologically upsetting movie,
totally,
you just really don't want to also be craning your neck to experience this trauma.
Absolutely.
So that was strike one. But then I went to the bathroom at a certain point. Not really a movie you want to go to the bathroom during because it's very like plot heavy and like just intense.
Yeah.
And if you miss any of it, it like a lot of it could, a lot can happen in the 3 minutes you're gone. But I knew that, you know, I was like, I don't need to be experiencing every second of this horrific film. And by horrific, I mean, to experience, it's a very well done, beautiful film, I guess. I just will never watch it again. But while in the bathroom, I just looked up the Wikipedia page and read the ending because I was like, I actually can't handle any more of like sitting here and like just getting ready for them to kill one of their kids. That's what the entire movie is you just sitting like kind of tapping your foot waiting for them to kill a kid.
Yeah.
And I just needed to know which one it was going to be. And once I had that answer, I was able to just kind of sit back, relax, and wait for the movie to be done. But when my boyfriend at the time found out that I did that, we got in an actual fight about it. He's like, I can't believe you looked up the ending. Like, that's so fucked up.
I had a chronic problem of when I was a kid that I would go see a movie with my dad. And then, like, you know, my sisters would want to see it. My mom would want to see it. And I would just accidentally
spoil
the end every time. Every time. Every time. I would tell them the end.
I almost think it's like a nervous energy thing. It's like you don't want to, so you do.
Well, it's like they say when you're riding a horse, you don't want to look where you don't want to go.
Okay.
Because the horse can like subconsciously pick up that you're like that you're focused on this point over here. And so even if you think you're steering the horse in this other direction, like if you're looking at the thing you don't want the horse to walk towards, it will start walking towards it.
Yeah.
And I think that's just like, you know, not to be a manifestation girly, but I do think that that's like what we do in life a little bit. I do it with finances.
Yeah.
personally. I'm like, oh, I hope I don't go broke again. And then like, no matter what, I go broke mm-hmm. again.
Yeah.
Rather than like, oh, I hope I stay financially stable. Yeah. Should be the hope that I'm focusing on.
Totally.
I should be thinking about how clean I'm going to keep this shirt. Not like every day I get tomato sauce on this shirt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or people who like they're like always late.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm an incredibly punctual person, but like in my lifetime, I've been a much more late person than I currently am. Like I used to just always be atrociously late to things. Yeah. And I would just kind of say like, oh, fuck, not again. I'm always fucking late. And like now I just sort of self-identify as a person who's like pretty punctual and I'm like pretty on time to things now.
Yeah, I'm generally early to most things because my dad, when he would give me rides to stuff, would make sure I was there at least 10 minutes early because he has anxiety about being late to things.
See, that's the thing is like I had parents that were constantly just like we would leave at the time that we had to be at the thing.
But I was consistently late to like every day of high school, which was hilarious because I lived a 4-minute drive from to school.
I like lived the closest to the high school out of all of my friends and I was like 10 minutes late every day.
I got at least one person every week to give me a ride home from school, even though I lived 4 blocks away because I didn't feel like walking.
4 blocks.
Yeah.
4 blocks.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't live in New York yet. That was a lot. I lived in a driving city.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand.
Also, I had a big backpack. I didn't want anyone like looking at me while I was walking with my big backpack.
Yeah, it's loser behavior to walk with a big backpack
and a uniform.
Like, and a uniform. I get it.
Plus, I had to be home by at least 4 because me and my mom had plans. We'd watch Ellen at 3, Oprah at 4, and then switch to Judge Judy halfway through the 4 p.m. Oprah episode. Then I'd fall asleep and not do my homework until 10 p.m.
Gorgeous, gorgeous girls love sleeping at the wrong time of the day.
Yep.
So that they have to do everything at a non-normal time of day.
Yeah, get 3 hours of sleep for school.
Yep.
And also like not eat breakfast because I woke up too late.
Same.
Oh,
could not be more same.
Just lived on coffee.
Yeah.
At school.
And just like deep, deep hunger pains.
Yep. Oh my God. The worst. Just looking at the clock and being like, I have 10 more 5-minute increments until this class is over and then 5 more of those till lunch.
And then I can eat this dried out cafeteria food.
We actually had really good cafeteria food. It's the reason I chose my high school was the theater department and the cafeteria food.
How the fuck did you have good cafeteria food?
We just like went, I don't know. I just went to like a bougie private school. So we had like really good fries and they would have like, they had like a hot bar and a cold bar. So like really good fries and pizza and then like different like, actual meals that you could eat. They had a sandwich, cold sandwich bar. I'm hungry too. I have to go to the market after this.
We had such dried out cafeteria pizza that I became a person that ate pizza with ranch just so that like the pizza could go down more easily.
Yeah.
And now I like pizza with ranch, but like the way I got there is actually
it's
a sad tale about underfunded public schools.
It was a trauma bond and your abuser that you bonded with was the school that you went to.
Anyway, should we segment?
Let's do it.
Mistakes, keepsakes, and hot takes.
Well, my mistake this week is that I bled through these Teddy Fresh pants. Sorry, Ethan and Ella Klein. I wish my pussy had more respect for your beautiful brand.
Ella, famously my doppelganger.
Yes, and famously makes incredible pants. I love these pants.
Yeah, those are really nice. Ella, come on the pod.
Oh my God, Ella, come on the pod. Honestly, that would be when I know we've truly made it, is if we could get Ethan Klein to come on the podcast to talk about the Trisha Paytas situation.
Oh my God, that would be iconic.
Like, that is all I want.
I just want everyone to know that the sunset right now
is gorgeous.
It's iconic. It's
also iconic that we're recording during a sunset. Usually it's already pitch black
I know. The tides are turning.
The daylight has
Spring
been saved.
Is on its way.
Yeah. My keepsake this week, I have just started to like get more momentum with some personal goals of mine. And I've just been like getting into and staying in some good habits, that have been like benefiting my life and health and, I'm not saying that it's going to be that way forever, but it's that way right now. You know what? No, I'm not going to look where I don't want the horse to go.
Yeah.
It's going to be that way forever. And I, yeah, like I'm just like consistently, I figured out a way to take my vitamins more consistently and like eat healthier more consistently and save money a little bit more. Like I've cut out as much, like I'm not like eating takeout nearly as much as I was even like a month ago. And I've been like figuring out ways to incorporate working out again into my daily routine. I've been like on that journey for a minute, but like the thing that I've been struggling with is like actually doing it every day or almost every day. And yeah, I just, you know, I realized my gym is 24 hours and I'm somebody whose energy peaks later in the evening. So I don't need to go right when I wake up when I feel like shit, just because that's like what a lot of other people do.
Totally.
Or like I don't need to go in the afternoon just because like the sun is still out and it feels like it's like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Like I can work out at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
And in fact, even though it's later in the evening, it is helping me go to bed slightly earlier than I normally do.
Oh, yeah.
And then my hot take, I found my first gray hair this week.
Yes.
Which is, you know, a little late in the game, perhaps. And it might just be that I've had gray hair this whole time. And I'm someone who dyes my hair. So
you
I just didn't know.
Have a whole patch in the back of your head that we can all see.
That we've all been talking about.
We have a whole group chat about it.
Called Anya's Great Patch.
Yeah. The icon on the chat is just an old woman.
Well, good. Because I actually got excited about it. Because my hot take is that it's like, I mean, I know this isn't that hot of a take and like people have been desperately trying to spin this narrative for a while now, but that like getting older is actually like a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's an accomplishment and it's a privilege that not everybody has.
Mm-hmm.
And every year that I get older, I like myself more and I learn more and I become a better version of myself. And you know, I think there are certain things that I understand wanting to put off signs of aging. Like, as somebody who really has a lot of pride in my skin, I definitely do a lot to my skin routine that like is in with the intention of like not getting too many wrinkles too soon.
Yeah.
Or like there are certain markers of aging that I like completely understand why we don't want it to happen right away.
Totally.
But gray hair is just chic, in my opinion.
I agree.
I think it looks good.
It does.
And I think that it being like an indication that you're getting older is maybe one of the only reasons people don't like it.
Absolutely.
Because it looks good.
It also is. I have heard my mom like was really resistant to going gray because she's heard going gray pretty young in her early 30s. Finally went gray a few years ago and loves it. But she said that it's also just like a little bit hard to maintain gray hair sometimes,
yeah,
because the texture of it is, yeah, way different than your natural colored hair.
Yes.
So I think
it's
that,
like coarse.
Yeah. Also, I'm sure like dyeing your hair for years, I mean, that we know that has a negative effect on your hair. So maybe,
right,
maybe that also affects how it goes gray, the texture of it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
My mom was like, you know, blonde with highlights for most of my teen years.
Right. As if like blonde hair doesn't ruin your texture too.
Yeah. As a natural brunette.
Yeah. Like absolutely. Well, yeah. Yeah,
no, I can't wait to go back to brown. It's like, I love being blonde. I feel so sexy. But my hair just like breaking every time I run my fingers through it is honestly the worst.
Yeah.
And I don't care what anyone says. Like, you can take care of your hair so much, it does not stop your bleached hair from breaking. Like, it still breaks. It's,
yeah,
just, I do wonderful things to my hair. It still breaks. My hair never broke when it was brown.
Yeah, period.
I also just miss it like being shiny.
Yeah.
You know, I almost miss having greasy hair. You know, I miss like a greasy bang.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Going blonde just absolutely dries it out.
I don't
and
know.
Now Olaplex is being like recalled or something. Like for the number what? The number three, the one that everybody tells you to fucking use, which I stopped because I was using like number 0, 1, and 3 after I bleached my hair because both of my hairstylists at the time told me to use it. Everyone online swears by it. But yeah, now it's like, it's either being recalled officially or unofficially, but everybody is posting about why you shouldn't use it anymore because there's some chemical in it that's horrible for your hair.
Duh.
Does it cause infertility? Oh, I thought... Oh, somebody on Twitter wrote that it was bad for your hair. Okay. Oh, maybe it'll have the opposite effect on me and give me a uterus.
You become the face of Olaplex. You're like, yeah. Thanks to Olaplex, I have a uterus now.
I have that. I have the baby.
But then like a month later, you're like, I hate this.
I have the baby I've always wanted. I immediately give it up. Yeah. Gorgeous head of hair. And
you immediately get an abortion, but then you go viral on TikTok for your trauma from losing a baby.
It would be so exciting to be the first and cunt to be the first trans woman to get pregnant and then have an abortion. That'd be clutch.
If anyone deserves that, it's you.
I know. I would want the best abortion party thrown for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Anyway, hot take is... I'll throw that party for sure.
Great.
You know I'll throw the fuck out of that party. Carrie Nation will play that party.
Amazing.
I've decided for them.
Yeah, Nita and Will listen. They're like, what?
They're like, I mean, listen, this party that's never going to happen. Yeah, sorry, I volunteered you for it. I basically just said when pigs fly,
yeah,
you'll play this party. But if you are upset about that, come on the pod. Talk to us about it. No, my hot take is that gray hair is chic, hot, and cool, and getting older is chic, hot, and cool. And if we got gray hair at 16 rather than at 26, we would be so excited to have it because that's when getting older is still like exciting.
Yeah.
Because we're like, oh my God, look, I'm like taller and my tits are coming in or whatever it is. Like we're so excited to become adults. And all of a sudden, any other sign of aging after a certain age, we fucking hate it. And I think it's time to change that narrative.
Yeah.
Forehead lines and gray hair are hotter than ever.
Yeah.
Because we did it. We made it to a new era and we are not the toxic little shits we were when we were 21. Shouldn't that be something to celebrate?
Yes.
Anyway, your turn.
My mistake. I had a really bad, weird acid trip on Saturday at Carrie Nation. And this like all started in Somos. But I had like a weird drug experience at Somos that has stuck with me, that has been on my mind. And so, I mean, the mistake itself is that I just shouldn't have done acid. It was like an impulsive decision because I didn't feel like thinking about what was on my mind. But that was dumb because acid always puts it right back on your mind. but I like had this acid trip on Saturday where I've been feeling since Somos, I've been in this like thought spiral of feeling like weirdly like unworthy of like how much my friends and like acquaintances and people in our community and just like random people like seem to love and also like celebrate me, like from people at like work who come in and like think that I'm like this like cool cunty bitch to like people at Somos treating me like really sweetly. I have been in a place where I've like not been able, I guess, to accept it. It's been like making me feel like everyone is kind of nuts for seeing that in me because I have not been able to see it for the last few months. And so that just took hold of me on Saturday and it just like extended into the afters at your apartment. Like I wasn't really talking to anyone because it was on my mind. I like tried to talk to our friends about it for a little bit, but then I got uncomfortable because then I was feeling even more self-hatey and was like, oh my God, you're so emotionally needy. Like, why are you being that girl at the afters right now where you have to like talk about your feelings? Like everyone just wants to like do drugs and like listen to music and like kiki and you're like thought spiraling right now. So yeah, I just, the mistake obviously is the doing of the drugs to escape from how I've been feeling rather than just like sitting with it and trying to think where it stems from. But the keepsake also it was related to it in the sense that like the afters was my keepsake, I guess. There was just like a moment where I like was starting to fall asleep in your bed while like everybody was in the kitchen eating and watching YouTube videos and laughing. And I felt like just a lot of love for our friends and felt like really happy that I have the friends that I do and that we all like really look out for each other and take care of each other. And, you know, in any way that we need to be taken care of, I feel like all of our friends are consistently looking out for one another, which not everyone can say about their friends. I certainly haven't always been able to say that, and I haven't always been that friend either. So that was sweet. And my hot take, which also was an acid thought at Good Room, was that I'm actually sore happy that I am a woman in this community and that most of our friends don't want to fuck me.
Yeah.
Because I was just watching people be passed around at Carrie. And I was like, oh, actually, I'm so glad that I get treated like a mother, sister, daughter rather than like a lover or like, you know, a hungry, hungry hole. I was like, that would actually just not, that would suck up so much of the fun for me, because there is this like expectation and pressure, I think, if you are desired at the party that you're gonna fuck someone.
Mm.
Or maybe not, but I think for a lot of people, and then it causes all these insecurities. So yeah, I'm back in a place where I'm like, actually, please keep desexualizing
me. Yeah, count me out.
Count me out. Put me on the bench for the season and keep treating me like just the womanly woman that I am.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Thank you. I just like rarely want to fuck at the club. So I'm just like glad that I don't have to be put in that position. I mean, it isn't, you know, it's still annoying to feel so othered or whatever, but I'm like, you can actually put me back on that trans girl goddess pedestal if you would like. I mean, no one ever took me off of it, but I've been trying to climb down from it. But I'm like, I'll actually stay up there for the foreseeable future. Thanks.
Yeah. Love that pedestal.
Yeah. It's really nice. Yeah. Until it's not. But right now I'm loving it.
Yeah. Until I resent it deeply. But
yeah. Which I usually do. But not this week.
So we both have different fuck ups of the week that we talk about.
We do. I'm going to pull mine up.
Okay. My fuck up of the week that also came to my attention on TikTok. Listen, TikTok is the new MySpace, okay? And by that, I mean it's the new Facebook. And by that, yes. I mean it's the new Twitter. And by that, I mean it's TikTok. What? Yes. Well, TikTok isn't dead yet. It will be. The circle of life is that it too will be replaced in all of our hearts and minds. But right now, boy, am I on it. It's so much more fun than any of the other platforms. But there's this person there's a musician who came to my attention on TikTok who released a little snippet of her song that she like was trying to promote, and it went viral. And at first it went viral in a good way. Like a lot of people were like, oh my God, I love this song. It's so relatable. And even some like big musicians commented on it like, oh, like this is amazing. Like you're on the right track. And then it just got to that, you know, tipping point of being viral where people who didn't like a couple of the lyrics absolutely ratioed her. And so I'm going to play the thing that she put on TikTok.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you what you think it is everyone got mad about.
Okay.
And then we're going to talk about it. Okay.
Okay.
So here's the song.
Hey, Mom. I like boys too. I'm not a raging full-on lesbo, wait, I was for like a second, but that's what's hard about 2022. You can switch it up and swing whichever fucking way you want to. I know when you're out and there's a boy that's my age, you give him my number and show a pic of my face. I'm not saying don't, I'm just saying if you do, if you insist, here's my list. Find me a man without an ego who can cry when things get tough, and when he makes a big ass promise, has the balls to back it up. Find me a man who knows the difference between sex and making love.
Is it the lesbo for 2 seconds comment?
Yeah.
Or just that the song is bad?
I don't think the song is bad. I think it's just like, you know, a catchy little tune that I don't think she knew was going to like get the traction that it did. I was like, well, that's not great. But I also didn't expect it to get like quite as much backlash as it did.
So bored.
That's the thing. Is it just like the amount of backlash that it's gotten, I feel like is very indicative of like how chronically online people are.
Go to a party.
Because for me, here's the thing. Everyone was mad because technically lesbo is a slur. And they were obviously like, okay, if you also like men, then you're not a lesbian, so don't say that word.
Yeah.
However, like her response to it, she's like, oh my God, I actually like legitimately had no idea that's a slur. I've like identified as a lesbian for a while now and only recently like realized I still like guys. So like I thought I was just singing about that my sexuality is fluid and it's something that I've been figuring out recently. And like that was just like what fit into that line. And I had no idea that it was like an offensive term. And after that, like, and you know, she has her multiple little apologies that she posted about like how she's like learning and she's sorry. And to me, I'm like, you can still be offended by that. And still like, even though she just said she didn't have any idea, still be like, I don't care that you didn't have any idea. That's still offensive. Mm-hmm. It's just like weird to me to be even more angry at her about this thing than people who are like purposefully saying slurs and purposefully being homophobic and shitty. Alone. It's like really, really strange to me. but yeah, anyway, the internet is actually like absolutely tearing her down. Everything she's posted since then keeps getting ratioed and people keep like there's this one person that I noticed is replying to every single comment on all of her videos saying that she supports corrective rape of this song, saying that she's like okay if her mom sets her up with a man now, because apparently that's the same as corrective rape.
Oh my God.
Like it's just like it's giving very much go outside, you know?
Seriously.
It's really like
touch grass.
Like I do not at all. I'm like, I completely understand if you're still offended by that song, if you still don't like that song. But where I draw the line is like trying to deplatform this person with 7,000 followers.
Insane.
Young, I don't know, early 20s.
Psychotic.
But yeah, to me, it was an interesting fuck up because it's definitely like, you know, anyone who's been around long enough to know that that's like a maybe don't say that. It's all like, ooh, girl, maybe don't say that. But it's like, I think it's equally a weird fuck up of the week how intense people have been in response. Like, it's just one of those things that's really circulating queer TikTok right now. And people think it deserves all this discourse and all this attention. And I'm having, my response has been very like, Kim, people are dying.
Seriously.
Like, what? And also it's like, you know, a lot of people at first were like, your experience is valid. Maybe just change that one lyric. And so now she's like come out with like her plan is to like still come out with the song and just change that one lyric. And now all these other people are like, if you come out with this song, it's just going to perpetuate the idea that like people that are lesbian are like only lesbian as a phase. And like everyone that like only likes women, like will eventually like men too, or like actually likes men too. And it's like, no, it doesn't. If that's just her personal experience, she can write a song about it.
Yeah.
And especially because that seems to be like a very big, it seems to be a very common experience that a lot of people are having right now, is like totally realizing that their sexuality is more fluid than they thought.
That they're straight.
What?
They're,
yeah, realizing that they're straight. Being queer was a phase and that we're all heterosexual.
And that's why I'm here this week to tell you all about IMD transitioning.
But it's just like, I don't think that there's anything wrong with like the idea behind the song.
No.
Personally.
I don't either.
But maybe that's because I'm somebody with a more fluid sexuality. But hey, that's who that song is for.
No, it's because you have a life.
But yeah, it's like, if you are just like very, if you have a very like strict binary sexuality, this song just wasn't for you anyway.
Yeah.
So like, be upset at that one lyric, hold her accountable, sure, but like refreshing her page to like comment on every new video she posts and like tell her that she can't even release the song anymore because the song in and of itself is homophobic, like, just move on.
Yeah. Agreed. My fuck up of the week is Jane Campion at, where is it? Jane Campion at the Critics' Choice Awards last night won Best Director for what's that movie?
Power of the Dog.
Power of the Dog. And for some psychotic and unknown reason, decided that she was going to use this moment.
For reasons still not yet clear to the press.
Not yet clear. She decided she was going to use this moment to say to Venus and Serena Williams, who were in the audience, Venus and Serena, you're marvels, but you don't have to compete against the men like I do. That's the full statement. The sisters were not up for the Best Director Award. I don't even know if they were nominated for anything. I'm assuming they were there for that movie that just came out about them with Will Smith. Uh-huh. Like, there was just kind of no reason to say that. It was just, yet again, a white woman being kind of the worst version of a white woman.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that definitely is, that's my fuck up of the week. I think that everyone just needs to leave those women alone. They're constantly being dragged through the mud in the press. I do not understand it.
Yeah.
It's always some white person saying something absolutely insane about them. I'm like, Jane Campion, why are you specifically threatened at the Critics' Choice Awards
while accepting a major award?
What is wrong with you?
It's also like kind of the implication that like competing against men is harder is weird.
Yeah. Also, it's like they have literally played men in tennis matches.
Yeah.
So like they have competed against men.
Right. But kind of regardless, totally. It's like, what does that say about you, what you think of women?
Yeah.
That you're like, see, I'm winning even though I'm competing against the people who are actually really hard to compete against. It's like, okay, tell on yourself.
Yeah, I just, Jen Campion, Campion, come on the pod. Okay. And just tell us why you felt the need to say any of that at all. Unrelated, shout out to Melanie Lynskey for winning the award for Best Actress in a TV series last night. For Yellow Jackets.
Yes.
I don't ever want to get married anymore, but if I did get married, I would only get married if my partner was just like Jason Ritter.
Why?
Her husband. He is just so loving. I love how obsessed he is with being married to her.
Yeah. He's just a cute little sweetie pie.
Yeah. I'd like to be a fly on the wall of their sex life. She's really hot. I want Melanie Lynskey to top me.
I love... Every day you come, you just inch further and further out of that closet.
Maybe by summer I will have fucked a girl with a pussy.
Because
we'll see.
It's like, you know, Jason Ritter is also hot, you know?
Yeah.
But that's not what you said.
Yeah, I guess my other hot take, even though we just did that, is what I said to you recently, which is I just, for everyone listening, went on a thought spiral recently about how maybe I actually just don't like men.
Yeah.
Like sexually.
There comes an important time in every woman's life when she realizes that maybe she just doesn't like men.
Yeah.
And then a follow-up moment a couple seconds later when she realizes she does still like men and she writes an offensive song about
yes.
it and goes viral on TikTok.
Yeah. I just, I think maybe like I said this on the Patreon episode, so I won't get too much into it so it can, you know, stay behind the paywall. Someone's been texting me this week that I fucked over the weekend. It's been turning me off, but I bet if it were a girl, I'd actually be really into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Depends on the girl.
Totally. But if it were like Melanie Lynskey.
If Melanie Lynskey were blowing up your phone, you'd be into
it. If you look like Melanie Lynskey and you want to blow up my phone, DM me.
It's so interesting. Like, not that Melanie Lynskey isn't hot. She is. I'm just fascinated by like the people, like the women that make you tick enough that you like bring them up all the time and like say like, if you look like this person, like let me know. Like, I just, most people, it's fucking Ruby Rose or no. Megan Fox.
Yeah, no.
And for you, it's like somebody who, while beautiful, is very much like an every woman
yeah.
type of beauty.
I love an every woman looking kind of girl.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love that.
I'm very turned on by girls and women who look like they would have like babysat me, you know, just like a real kind of like average but hot looking girl next door. You know, I don't want a Megan Fox. She's too hot.
Yeah.
A Ruby Rose never did it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I like someone who's a bit wholesome looking. Melanie Lynskey's very wholesome looking.
But like maybe they're not so wholesome. Like yeah, you she's want that little edge.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because yeah. she's got that like little look behind her eye.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I mean, she is hot. Don't get me wrong. It's just fascinating that she's like the one. That is like yeah, no, awakening
jackets,
this in you.
Yellow Jackets, really, I loved watching it just because of her. I think she's like, she really, I found to be so sexy on that show.
Yeah.
Even though she is absolutely insane on it. And the actress who plays her.
Because I know the actress that plays young her is also on your like gay list.
Oh my God. I'm so turned on by her. She's so fucking hot.
Not like as a teenager that she's portraying. No. The actress herself.
The actress who is 22.
Not that you looked it up or anything. Not that you checked.
I simply had to make sure that I wasn't lusting after a teenager again. Sorry, Cameron Caskey. I thought that you were at least 19 and I was only 23 at the time, so it like wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah, but
famously you were about to enter your junior year of high school.
And you know, we'll chalk that up to just a good old mistake.
Cameron Caskey, come on the pod.
Listener mistakes.
Hi Nika and Anya, I hope you're well. When I was 16, I was in a relationship that I realized I didn't want to be in after going out for less than 2 months. Wait. We did read this.
Did we?
Oh, no. I just read it. Sorry. We didn't read this. I created a false memory. Let me start over. Hi, Nika and Anya. I hope you're well. When I was 16, I was in a relationship that I realized I didn't want to be in after going out for less than 2 months. He had asked me to be his girlfriend about 3 weeks after we first met. And not knowing that you could just say no and still just casually date, I said yes. Even though this person was lovely, I quickly began to feel trapped and knew I needed to break up with them. I had and still have an issue with confrontation or emotional conversations of any kind where I feel like someone could get upset. So I knew this was going to be hard. Even knowing this, I managed to go above and beyond in my ineptitude. I texted him to come over and I put on a calm playlist that was around 40 minutes long. They arrived and we sat on my bed. But just after we said hello, I couldn't even get the I need to tell you something part out. I kept thinking in my head, say it, just say it. Then, after minutes of silence, say anything. I had become mute. I actually sat there with my mouth opening and closing, sometimes getting I out, but nothing else. The playlist ended and we sat in more silence while his face got more and more concerned, then sad, and then he just started crying because he knew what I was trying to say. I just apologized and we hugged for a while and they left and that was that. I am still bad at emotion-heavy conversations, but I'm happy to say it's never been that bad since. My mistake? Firstly, getting into a relationship when I was not actually interested in being in one. Secondly, thinking it's okay to treat someone like shit as long as it's passive and not overt. And finally, making the break-y guess that a breakup is happening after 45 minutes of silence instead of just ripping off the Band-Aid. Love you as always, Annie.
Oof, I mean, Annie, are you a cancer?
No, but I mean, I've been there. I did that to both of my boyfriends. I also did not want to be in a relationship. I did that. I mean, I did it even worse. I like ghosted them both. I texted my first boyfriend after dating for like 4 months to say that I didn't want to date him anymore. And then I just ghosted the other guy that I was dating.
Yeah.
I understand.
Hurting people is hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, that reminds me a lot of this season of Love is Blind when one of the people accepts a proposal even though she doesn't want to marry him mm-hmm. because I feel like just because she like felt bad. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of a legendary iconic moment. So Annie did it first.
Yeah.
But yeah. It is hard if you know you're going to hurt someone's feelings, but it's only worse if you like make them hurt their own feelings yeah. for them.
Just do it.
Just do it. That's Do it. Do like the Nike motto and just do it. This episode's sponsored by Nike.
Beer sponsor.
We're sporty girls.
Out of some. I mean, my whole spring and summer look is going to be athleisure wear.
Yeah.
I'm just leaving yoga class, even though I don't do yoga. I might start doing yoga. No, I don't like yoga. So sponsor us, because I'd wear the fuck out of like a matching Nike set. I want to be like one of the like the Siskays who wears like the matching Nike socks with like the matching Nike sneakers tucked in to their like matching, or like with the Nike joggers tucked in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like a Nike sports bra.
Absolutely. Maybe a hat even.
A Nike, yes. A Just Hillary Do It Clinton hat. A Just Do It hashtag. I want a Nasty Woman hat. Yeah.
Hillary Clinton and Nike team up. To sponsor us,
yeah,
and make our merch,
yes.
With
we got a cease and desist from the Hillary Clinton campaign for making Nasty Woman merch.
Oh my god, we Hillary do a live Rodham Clinton come on the podcast.
We do a live recording at the next Women's March.
Oh my god.
We wear pink pussy hats. I did used to wear a pink pussy hat as a joke. It was a lot of fun. So like, this isn't the first time I've done this.
Thank you for your mistake, Annie.
Thank you. We love you as well.
We love you. And, you know, take this lesson with you and just rip the Band-Aid off next time. You actually remind me that this mistake reminds me a lot of the time when I was dating my like second serious boyfriend I ever had. When I was 19, I may have been 20 by the time this happened, but 1920 is when I dated this person. We made plans to hang out and we went to the store. Like, we were like walking around town together. Then we went to the store. We like got like deli sandwiches, I got a deli sandwich because he wasn't hungry. We sat down. I ate half of the sandwich. He asked for the other half because he realized he was hungry. He ate the other half. And then after he was done eating the other half is when he said, "The reason I wanted to hang out today is because I don't think I want to date you anymore."
Oof.
And I was like, really? We just like spent the entire day together and you just ate half of my sandwich.
Oh my God.
And that's when you decided like you couldn't open with this. And I did, listeners, I did get back together with this person a couple weeks later when he realized he had made a mistake. So
yeah, your story really reminds me of somebody like kind of spending 24 straight hours with me and like letting me like nap in their bed with them. And then the next day telling me that something I had said that night made them feel really weird. And I was like, so at what point did you think that if you were feeling weird, you maybe shouldn't have let me cuddle with you in your bed? Interesting. Gorgeous girls.
See, this is why I'm just like, this is why I'm a confrontational person, because it's like, it is so much worse to like finally spit it out or get the other person to like guess what's wrong. And then for that person to retroactively realize all the shit that like has happened between when you decided this or felt this way and when they finally got the information.
I mean, it's the same feeling as when you find out that the person at the end of the movie has been dead the whole time.
You're like, cool. So what was the point of this entire thing?
Yeah. I mean, oof, my God.
Or like, you know, then they wake up. Oh, it was all a dream.
Yeah.
Like, no offense, Wizard of Oz, but like, what business do I have watching this other person's dream?
Psycho.
What business do I have?
Also, I'm a person.
Yeah. What business do I have hanging out, vibing, chilling with you this whole time when you wanted to break up with me or when you were mad at me? Like,
yeah.
Just tell me.
Anyway, for that reason, I want to tell you.
Live, on air.
Nika and Anya's first fight.
Nika's like, it really bothers me that you think my obsession with Hillary Clinton is a joke.
I need to stop though, because I have like obsessively joked about things before to the point that I then became actually genuinely into the thing I joked about. So I don't.
Right. Like you go from ironically saying something to it's just part of your vernacular.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, sure.
Jesus.
Or like, it's giving. And like, you know, I mean, the entire world did that with literally.
Oh, literally. Yeah.
The entire American culture did it with like all those isms from the 2000s, like Doge and Doggo. And...
Oh, I still call a Doge a Doge when I see a floof.
A Doge is a Doge is when a Doge is a Doge.
When I see a Doge on the street, I say, Doggo, that is such a floof.
I love your little snoot.
Bark, bark.
I just want to boop it.
Once again, bringing our millennial listeners together with this millennial Tumblr speak.
Oh, God. Tumblr, take us back. But not present Tumblr.
No,
porn
I want
Tumblr.
Porn Tumblr.
We want naughty, naughty Tumblr.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's... we do run the risk of... I mean, I did that with Trisha Paytas.
Yeah.
Where I was like, LOLOL, she's so silly. And then I did genuinely... I was a fan for part of last year. Those were dark, dark days.
I can't recall what I... Oh, I mean, I did it with... Well, that's like not really as relevant, but I did it. I've done it with shows. Like I did it with This Is Us. I like.
Oh, yeah. This Is Us, I think, is like the 50% of its ratings are people watching it as a joke.
I started watching it as a joke.
And then they get obsessed.
And now I cry every week when an episode comes out. So, yeah, but I've like done it with, I have like ironically become friends with people as a, being like, I don't actually like that person's horrible. And then eventually I'm like, wait, and now I'm friends with this person.
Literally you becoming friends with me.
Shut the fuck up. I haven't done it in years. Don't worry, anyone listening to the pod, if you're in my current life, it's not any of you.
You were not an ironic friend.
Yeah,
but maybe you've become one.
Maybe I find out that I ironically transitioned.
God damn it.
I ironically got bottom surgery.
This is supposed to be a joke. Why are people taking this so seriously?
Oh god, I mean, I did kind of ironically like run for office, and then like I ran as a gag. It was very gaggy, and then people,
you're like, oh my god, I'm looking camp right in the eye,
right in the eye. And then people were like, we love her, and that's when I was like, fuck,
you're too likable.
I'm so
that was kind of your mistake this week too. You're like, oh, I'm sad because too many people like me and I just don't feel like I deserve it, which is a legitimate feeling,
it
and
is.
I'm
I
not
know
diminishing
I,
it,
listen, I didn't,
but it is very like, ugh, I'm just, my metabolism is too fast.
I mean, my metabolism is too fast.
And so is mine, but we don't talk about it because people don't want to hear it.
Listen, I didn't really want to talk about it, but I was like, I have, you know, for the sake of being on brand and consistently overly honest, I think it's a feeling that a lot of people might relate to.
Yeah.
A feeling unworthy of
the love that people
give
you.
Of being popular.
Of being popular and iconic.
After a lifetime of not being popular.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do know. And that's why I say this not to actually diminish how you feel.
No, I don't think that you
but
are.
But it is very much like, ugh. It's just such a burden how many people love me, and my like heart and brain can't accept it, which it is a burden. But if you're a person who currently is lonely, you want to just absolutely punch you in the face.
Absolutely. I got it. Come punch
ironically,
me in the face at the next party that you see me at. If
you're
lonely.
Do not do that, please. Do not.
I mean, just break my nose so I can get the nose job I want. It'll be paid for.
Wouldn't it be paid for anyway?
Oh god, the paperwork to fucking get a Medicare to cover trans-related surgeries, which I get because they're like, how do we, you know, we need to know that this is actually because you have dysphoria, which it's not. I'm like, nothing about my face makes me feel manly. I just would like a few little nips and tucks. I just want one thing about my nose fixed. That's it.
Wait, what is it again?
I just want this to be taken up because it's like crooked and just hangs down too much. That was one of the things, the like where my nostrils are. That was one of the things they wanted to do. They also wanted to straighten it, which I was like, maybe. But then the idea of them, then I looked up what a nose job entails and I was like, nope, nope, nope.
Do you think maybe just like getting a septum piercing?
I am going to get a septum piercing.
Yeah, I feel like that's just going to, that's it. That'll
totally.
Fix it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
it's like getting a tattoo where in a part of your body that you're self-conscious of.
Yeah.
It's like, it kind of takes the attention away, even though it brings the attention to the body part, it takes the attention away from the thing you don't like about it.
Yeah.
And
no,
it also
absolutely.
I think makes a lot of people that I know that have done this, it makes them like that body part more because now they have like a thing that's cool about
also,
it.
Also, I could never get a nose job because I wouldn't be able to do nose drugs for a while.
Oh my god, let's become boofing
queens.
I mean,
I want to boof all of Gathering. I love boofing drugs. It's just better and you do less because it hits your system like that. I've boofed twice now. I really want to boof Molly at Gathering.
Oh my god. For listeners who might not know, boofing just means putting drugs in your butt instead of in your nose.
Yeah. But like not the, you know, you have to like put it in something to put up your butt. I always thought that you could just put like, I didn't know. I'm just saying for someone who might not know, I thought you could just take like a tab of acid and like put it in your butt, you know, or like take like Molly, you know.
The powder. I feel like the tab of acid you could just put in your butt.
Oh, I do not want to boof acid.
No.
No way.
But acid is maybe the one example that it actually would probably just get absorbed by your butt. But no, you have to dilute it.
Yeah, and put it in like a
like
know,
dissolve it a in syringe something, or something, and then and in a boofing syringe, not like a needle.
Yeah, or like a you know a needle syringe without the needle in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But just to be clear.
Yeah, I mean it's a really fun feeling just having it. You know, it's kind of like someone's coming in you, but it's cold. I did it Halloween weekend, and it was fun. Anya's making a throw up face right now.
All the respect in the world to the anal girls, gays, and theys, but I do not enjoy the feeling of cum in my ass. So that was, and then picturing it then be cold, like fucking Bill from True Blood coming, drugs in your ass. I mean, maybe Eric though. Actually, Eric coming drugs in my ass. I could fuck with that imagery.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that takes me
to cum drugs in my ass.
That's the one thing that takes me out of all vampire lore is picturing their cold, cold loads.
I mean, I guess it depends because like the Twilight lore is that it's warm.
Right. But I mean, cold vampire lore.
Totally.
Like
yeah.
The True Blood vampires are cold to the touch. And
yeah.
Their blood is cold and yeah. Everything about them is so like, you know, Sookie's always like, oh, you're so cold. And like he comes in her. They fuck to completion every time they have sex, which means he has cold, icy vampire loads. And that just sounds so uncomfortable to me.
Yeah. I mean, I
no,
would.
Thank you.
Though I don't know if I liked the feeling of, you know, cold boofing water up my butt, then maybe I would like cold cum.
Okay.
It wasn't freezing though. So, you know, if it's like, I don't want it vampire cold, it was just cold, but it wasn't like, you know, Titanic ass water. Ass water. It was ass water though.
We're going to release our own boofing line and call it ass water.
We should release our own boofing line. We should release our own boofing line right around the same time that me and Trinity release our,
Your vape line.
Our vape line called Nicotine Idol.
Yeah.
Nicotine Idol coming to a store near you.
Deep dive. Deep dive.
When I was in high school, I went to a private arts program every summer. And in order to get into that program, you had to like, you know, fill out an application, submit a portfolio of work, and you had to get a teacher recommendation from like an art teacher at your school that you go to. And, you know, then if you needed financial aid, there's like a few more things that you had to do. But in any case, I was 14. I didn't know how application processes work. Like, it's not like I was also applying to college at this point. This is the first thing I'd ever applied for. I didn't have a job. And so when my ceramics teacher wrote me a teacher recommendation and put it in an envelope and sealed the envelope and then like signed her name over the seal, none of that was enough indication for me, I guess, to know that I wasn't supposed to read the teacher recommendation. So I just being curious, like fully opened the envelope and read the whole thing. And it was very nice. It was very sweet. It was very glowing. Mm-hmm. But then it just like occurred to me after the fact. I'm like, surely she did it this way because I wasn't supposed to read this.
Yeah.
And then I sure enough looked up like the thing that they sent, like you're supposed to like, you know, print out this thing for your teacher to follow the rules of their recommendation. So I like actually read the thing that I handed her and it's like seal it in an envelope and sign your name on it. And so I had to like return to her like, I am such an idiot. And I tried to lie at first. I was like, oh, I spilled something on the envelope.
Oh my God.
And she was like, no, you didn't. Just say that you read it. Just admit that you read it. It's okay. Because as if you read it, you know that it was all good things. So I don't mind that you read it. But like next time, just ask me for a copy of it.
Yeah.
Because now this is taking up more of my time.
Yeah.
And like this is just like a very understandable curiosity killed the cat situation, but just own it, girly. Yeah. So then I was like, yeah, I read it.
Oh my God.
And I'm so sorry. And then she resealed it and sent it. And I got into the arts program and all was well. And now I know not to read the recommendation letters people send on your behalf.
Hell yeah. Much like your curiosity killing the proverbial cat, this relates to this week's best mistake, which is about the Manson family and the murders that they committed. So let's get into it.
Best mistake.
So some backstory for Charles Manson. I think most of us know who he was. If we don't, you'll find out by the end of this episode. But some backstory on his early life. He was born in 1934 to a teen mom. And his early childhood and his youth was spent bouncing around between relatives and later in and out of both institutions for troubled youth and then prisons in the Midwest. It was actually like he was in jail so much that when he was released from jail in his 20s, he asked the warden if he could just stay. So it just that's like how much it became just his life. And
he just loves his chosen fam and his community.
That was in 1967 when he was released from a California prison. Obviously, the warden said no, and so Manson fucked off to fucked off to Berkeley and then San Francisco and California, which notably were cities in the 60s that were becoming flooded with young people looking to embark on a new way of life, i.e. the hippies. The majority of these people were young white people in their teens and early 20s who had grown up in the suburbs. A lot of them were suburban, middle-class white girls who were kind of looking for something larger than themselves and larger than these mundane, you go to high school, you marry a man, you have babies, you die lifestyle. Very relatable. So he gets there and he is an older figure among the crowd. And because of his age and just because of his personality in general, he amasses a small group of followers who are almost entirely white, again, white suburban women. And in 1968, he heads along with several female followers to LA to pursue a music career, which the pursuing of a music career is an important beginning step in what would lead to this cult being formed and these tragic murders that then happened. But he decides he wants to pursue a music career because he learned how to play the guitar in prison. And his tools of persuasion were aided and abetted by the lax social codes of the late 60s, because it was an environment where runaway hippies mingled freely with Hollywood royalty, and his ability to tell others what they wanted to hear, both of which he parlayed into a friendship with Dennis Wilson, who famously was the drummer for the Beach Boys. So essentially, Charles Manson, from the get-go of his life on the West Coast, was a magnetic, manipulative player amongst this Hollywood elite who, in their own way, were looking for something larger than themselves and the fame they had amassed, and which is why they were mingling with these everyday, kind of quote-unquote, normal hippies. So through Wilson, Manson met other music industry players and grew really fixated on stardom. And at the same time, he begins to exercise greater and greater control over the group that came to be known as the Manson family. He was, as an investigative journalist, Jeff Gunn, put it in his book, Manson, The Life and Times of Charles Manson, the wrong man in the right place at the right time. So after the family members behind the August 1969 murders, which I'll get into, were apprehended, Manson was put on trial for murder along with them. But it's important, I think just interesting to note, like one of the most fascinating parts about this case is that Manson actually didn't kill anyone. Mm-hmm. But the prosecutor, Vincent Bugliosi, argued that he was as guilty, if not guiltier, than everyone in the cult because they did everything that Manson had ordered them to do, including murder. And he went on to be one of California's longest standing prison inmates and then died in November 2017. So now some context for who the followers were known as the Manson family. The kind of myth that has endured has been surrounded has kind of centered around the girls that became known as the Manson girls. They loomed almost larger than Manson himself in kind of the American culture's psyche after these murders, and honestly to this day. They were mostly young women in their late teens and early 20s, and the Manson family members were, in the late 1960s, not especially unusual. As I said, white middle-class women all over the country were heading for cities like San Francisco and LA, inspired by other hippies to, in quotes, turn on, tune in, and drop out. So Manson used his female followers to lure other men to both join the group and to financially support it. It was several of the women that initially met Dennis Wilson and brought Manson to his home. Manson and the family bounced around LA, eventually settling at the infamous Spahn Ranch, an old film and television set in the western San Fernando Valley. At Spahn, Manson exercised total domination over the group. Members were reportedly forbidden from wearing eyeglasses or carrying money. And in Member of the Family, My Story of Charles Manson, Life Inside His Cult, in the Darkness That Ended the 60s, a Manson follower by the name of Diane Lake, who was just 14 when she met Manson, detailed long nights of lectures in which Manson instructed others at the ranch to take LSD and listen to him preach about the past, present, and future of humanity. Some of the family members remained loyal to Manson even after he was sentenced to death, which again was later converted to life in prison for him and all of his followers who were convicted because the state of California overturned the use of the death penalty in the 70s. And now in 1975, one of Manson's earliest followers, Lynette Squeaky Frome, so years after the murders, went on to attempt to assassinate President Gerald Ford. But her gun was jammed and she was quickly caught by Secret Service. But just some more context for kind of how deep, I don't know what you want to call it, mental illness or just kind of an imbalance in these girls went. I think that it kind of extended past their relationship with Charles Manson. So some context for how Manson fit into the Hollywood scene of the 60s. He had connections to a number of wealthy and influential people in LA, notably, as I said, through Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys. And through him, he became acquainted with a record producer, Terry Melcher, who was son of the actress Doris Day and also the boyfriend of model and actress Candace Bergen, who famously played Sarah Jessica Parker's Vogue agent or boss in Sex and the City, for anyone who doesn't know who she is. So at one point, the daughter of actress Angela Lansbury was also an unofficial member of the Manson family, using her mother's credit cards to buy the family's food and clothing. Now, Melcher and Bergen lived at the house that Tate would eventually rent with her husband, director Roman Polanski, which was at 10050 Cielo Drive in LA, and it was a house that Manson ended up fixating on because he viewed it as a place of extreme rejection for him. Some people have posited that the house, again, represented Manson's rejection by the musical establishment because he'd courted Melcher as a patron, where Melcher lived at this house, and even hosted the producer at his ranch, where Melcher politely listened to Manson and the family perform, but wasn't really into it. Manson pinned a great deal of hope on his connections with Wilson and Melcher, and it's widely believed that once it became clear the two men weren't going to significantly advance Manson's career, Manson became increasingly focused on violence. Wilson did convince the Beach Boys to rework and record a version of Manson's song, which was called Cease to Exist, and they renamed it Never Learn Not to Love, but it was considered a flop. So the biggest kind of concept that that Manson spoke about amongst his family and cult was the idea of helter skelter. So I want to talk about what that was. So prosecutor Vincent Bugliosi and his exhaustive attempt to put together a motive for the family's killings landed on Manson's obsession with what he called helter skelter. Helter skelter was taken from a pretty innocuous Beatles song of the same name. Manson told his followers that the White Album was further evidence his theories about the end of the world were correct. Manson believed that Helter Skelter, if you played it backwards, rewinded it and played it backwards, that you could hear hidden messages that were alluding to the pending race war that would see thousands die and force the Manson family to disappear to underground caves. There, they would wait until it was time for them to emerge and rule what was left of the world. Insane. So while Manson initially foretold that the first crimes would be committed by black people against white people, the desperate state of his affairs in the summer of 1969, which were his musical aspirations, had largely come to nothing, and his Hollywood connections had dried up, led him to shift focus and tell the family they might have to begin helter-skelter themselves. Going on to commit savage crimes in upscale neighborhoods in an attempt to demonstrate to black people how the violence should be carried out. In 1974, prosecutor Bugliosi published the Helter Skelter, The True Story of the Manson Murders, which was the first major work examining the Manson family. Now, who were the victims? Excuse me. So the first murder happened on the night of August 8th, 1969, where Manson family members Tex Watson, who was Manson's right-hand man, Patricia Krenwinkel, Susan Atkins, and Linda Kasabian. Linda Kasabian later became the state's witness against the others, was offered immunity, and never served a prison sentence.
Damn.
She actually never murdered anyone, but she did go with them to the Manson family murders. To the murders of Tate and the other friends that were there that night. So that night, the 8 months pregnant Sharon Tate, who was an actress in the 60s and Roman Polanski's wife at the time, she appeared in the 1967 Valley of the Dolls and was considered one of Hollywood's most promising up-and-comers. She was relaxing at home at the Cielo Drive house, which she and Polanski were renting. And she was with friends who were celebrity hairstylist Jay Sebring, coffee heiress Abigail Folger, and Folger's boyfriend Wojtek Frajowski. None of these people had any tangible connection to Manson or the family other than being in the house previously occupied by someone Manson knew, which was the producer Terry Melcher. In the book Helter Skelter, the prosecutor Bugliosi writes that a witness for the prosecution described a March 1960 day on which Manson came to the Cielo Drive house looking for Melcher, but he found Sharon Tate on the porch instead. He went on to write, "There could be no question that Charles Manson saw Sharon Tate and that she also saw him," which honestly is bone-chilling. I just wonder what went through her head when... Or, well, actually, no. I guess she wouldn't have known that any of these people were there because of Charles Manson, but maybe.
Yeah.
But bone-chilling if she did. Yeah. I feel like they must have said something if they were this cult, but maybe not. So Tate and her friends were all murdered at the hands of Watson, Krenwinkel, and Atkins. So was Steve Parent, who was a teenage friend of the house's caretaker, who just happened to be pulling out of the driveway as the killers arrived and was shot by Watson. Now, the very next night, the same group of family members, plus Leslie Van Houten and Manson himself, set out to commit more murders. Manson apparently was pretty upset by how messy the murders the night before at Sharon Tate's home had been, and so he decided that he had to supervise. So they drove to the house of grocery business executive Lena LaBianca and his wife Rosemary in the Los Feliz area of LA. Now, the LaBiancas were completely unknown to the Manson family, but some of its members had reportedly been to a party in the neighborhood, so they scouted it out. According to the prosecutor, the LaBiancas were chosen at random after several hours of driving around upscale Los Angeles neighborhoods. I'm avoiding getting into detail, like, about the murders for any of these people, because I just don't want to, like, sensationalize it even more. And it's, like, consistently spoken about in detail how both the LaBiancas and Tate and all of her friends were murdered. So I'm just leaving it at that. But the LaBiancas were then murdered by the Manson family the next night. So obviously the brutal nature of the murders committed by the Manson family, and in addition to the fact that some of the victims were celebrities, has been thought about since the murders, and a lot of people feel that it, like, deeply changed and rewired the American cultural psyche, because it presented this idea that not only were celebrities not safe, but that the idea that you might not be safe at home For one, and the idea that even, in quotes, good girls are only a few moves away from committing what are considered unspeakable crimes. Mm. It also cemented the idea in popular culture that the free love movement of the 60s wasn't free at all. And it's a sentiment that Jeffrey Melnick further explores in his book called Creepy Crawling, Charles Manson and the Many Lives of America's Most Infamous Family. Obviously, I've always been, I think we all have a fascination with cults in general, but the Manson family cult has always really fascinated me just because it really presents this idea of the pitfalls of looking for community that gives you the feeling of being in a community where you're all chasing after the feeling of something being larger than yourself.
Also, like the feeling of like we all figured it out and the rest of society hasn't.
Yeah.
Like we know a secret that y'all don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like it can be a very intoxicating thing, but it can also make it seem like these are the only people in the world for you.
Yeah.
And if there's things that they're doing that you don't like or things that maybe are against what you would normally do, like you're maybe not as likely to catch that.
Yeah.
Because like you want to still belong to this group of people that gets you like nobody else gets you and that has like taught you what nobody else has been able to teach you.
Yeah. And also like I think they, the Manson family, like specifically the girls who were the murderers, like they really kind of like represent this idea of how like monotony and expectations that you just find to be suffocating can lead you first to places you find exciting and then just really dark places.
Yeah. There's also something just kind of like sad and annoying about how like it's actually not a bad thing inherently to question the status quo and to want something else for yourself and to like seek out different conventions and seek out like different types of family and community than what is like obvious or offered to us in the mainstream lifestyle that we're all supposed to adopt.
Yeah.
And so the fact that this happened and the fact that this is something that people can point to as like, see, like this is why you don't like look for something else. This is why you don't look for something better, because you'll end up a murderer in a cult. Like, not necessarily.
No, not at all. But I think, like, both things can be true, which is that, like, you should question things. You should question the monotony of life. And then also, you should be...
You should also question anything else that comes across your plate. Just because it's not the monotony of life doesn't mean it isn't also worthy of critical thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I just think on like a racial level, it just shows yet again the way in which white women are able to manipulate people with their white womanness. You know, like nobody suspected that these girls would ever do what they did. And they were like, Charles Manson knew that and he was able to weaponize that within them. And I think that is like a really interesting caveat of what happened.
Yeah, and in like running away from like being wives and mothers and like running away from like the expectation, like the sexist and oppressive expectations of womanhood, they like ran into the arms of white supremacy.
Yeah.
As if that isn't just as bad, if not worse.
Yeah.
But like, that's just what people, I mean, it shouldn't be. And I don't, by saying that's just what people do, I'm not like excusing it. It just is a kind of, it happens repeatedly that people who experience one marginalization and like work to build their life around like escaping that.
Yeah.
They tend to have absolutely no regard for the marginalization, if not outright violence, that they are committing and perpetuating themselves against others.
No, totally. And then just on like a really important note, me and Sharon Tate are birthday twins. So I personally believe that I was her in a past life.
This was also a crime committed against you.
Against
specifically.
Me. Yeah. It's really sad that that happened to me.
That is really sad that it happened to you.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry, everyone, if you wanted the gory, gory details.
I mean, they can get that on literally any murder podcast.
I know. And I'm like, I'm tired, specifically just the way that Sharon Tate's murder is talked about amongst everyone. It's kind of exhausting. It's like, she was this gorgeous pregnant white woman. It's so much sadder.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so fucking fascinating to me, the intersection that happens repeatedly between people who seek fame and people who, when they don't get it, just do something else terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, okay, so this was never really about the music, was it, Charlie?
Yeah, no, he just wanted to feel powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, clearly, you know, I'm not excusing any of what he did by saying this, but it's clear that he had lifelong deep-rooted trauma that led to him wanting to feel special and important.
Yes.
And instead, he never clearly got that
the people,
in a healthy way.
The people who want to feel special and important are sometimes the most evil and insidious types of people.
Yeah.
Like, that is not you excusing anything by pointing that out. Like, often, most of the most horrific crimes that have been committed in the name of somebody wanting to feel special.
Yeah, I want to, let me say my source really quick. Which is, it's an article from Smithsonian Magazine called What You Need to Know About the Manson Family Murders by Angela Serator. But I also want to suggest a book that's fiction. You and I have both read it. The girls.
No, I have not read it.
Oh, okay. I thought you had. I thought I saw it in your room once. Okay, well, everyone, if you're interested in these murders and you want a fiction book, it's called The Girls by Emma Klein. And it's loosely inspired by the Manson family, and the events that unfolded. The plot, I'll just read it, is the majority of the novel is set in 1969, focuses on 14-year-old Evie Boyd, who feels isolated and unloved and ends up spending the majority of that summer with a group of teenage girls on a ranch who are all devoted to an aspiring musician named Russell Heydrich. It's just a really, really good book. I think Emma Klein's a really terrific writer in the way that she gets into these girls' and women's later in life psyches. So yeah, if you want a book but you don't feel like reading a biography or a book that's really graphic, read that one.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got its own problems as a film, but I do really enjoy the way that this story is told in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I really want to watch it. I haven't yet. I never did because I thought that Sharon Tate was going to be more of a player in it, and then I read that she wasn't.
Yeah, no, well, because the whole point is that it is what would have happened if I'd been there is essentially what it is.
Oh.
What would have happened if Quentin Tarantino was there? Not really him,
Oh, okay.
So it doesn't end in Sharon Tate's murder.
Oh, okay.
Because they avoid it.
Oh, cool.
The whole point of the movie is what would have happened in a world
I never knew where
they get saved rather than get murdered. But
okay.
Sharon Tate is a character.
Yeah.
There's multiple scenes with her in it, but because she doesn't get murdered in it, she's not as important of a character.
Oh, that's actually really cool. And also so sad. Poor Sharon Tate.
Yeah. No, I mean, I really the whole reason Quentin Tarantino wanted to make this film is because, he it's kind of a love letter to Los Angeles, and Los Angeles really became what we know of it today in the 60s and 70s. That is when it became Hollywood in the way that we know it. And one of the most formative moments in that creation of Hollywood was this enormous event.
Yeah.
Of this cult committing these murders. And so he was really fascinated by the idea of what if this horrible thing never happened, but it almost happened.
Yeah, that's cool.
And so Brad Pitt's character meets a Manson girl and slowly becomes more and more aware of this ranch and the people at it. And he lives right next door. Well, his friend, Leonardo DiCaprio's character, lives right next door to Sharon Tate, and he's staying at that house.
Okay.
And so there's I'm not going to spoil too much, but he catches on to what's going on.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It's a great movie. It's 40 minutes too long, but it's so beautiful that you allow it to be that long.
Moral of the story. Thank you.
The real moral of the story is that everyone should have a gun.
Moral of the story is Sharon Tate should have been armed. She should have been practicing her right to bear arms.
It's so sad if just one of them had had a gun.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like it still would have gone down.
What's his name? Rex Watson also had a gun, so.
Yeah.
Oh, those poor people.
It's really fucked up and sad.
It's so sad.
I mean, moral of the story is be careful where the holes in your heart take you.
Yeah.
Be careful what you try to fill that hole with. It might be a racist, homicidal doomsday cult.
Or it might be the radical fairies.
That's what I said.
Yeah, yeah. Shut the fuck up.
Okay, to be clear, it's not any of those three things. It's not racist, homicidal, or doomsday, but cult?
Yes.
Maybe.
Loosely, but yeah.
All we need is one leader.
Why and that do you think leader, I joined the fairies?
That leader could be me, but all I need is a name. All I need, it's like I'm an improv troupe. I'm like, somebody name a relationship and a non-geographical location. Okay, Mother Bathroom, that's my fairy name.
I love that. I love that. You're going to get named. I'm going to get a mullet.
Are you going to get a mullet on the mountain?
Yeah, I'm going to have babes give me a mullet.
On the mountain.
On the mountain. Because they're bringing a whole like hair cutting station, right?
It's not to cut hair, but...
Oh, I thought it was. God damn it.
No, it's for people to be able to like get ready.
Oh, never mind. I won't get a mullet on the mountain. Someone there will be cutting hair, though, I'm sure. They're always doing weird fucking shit on that mountain. Someone was doing tattoos at Destiny, so I mean, literal tattoos. Which is why I was able to get Teen Idol tattooed on my chest.
In any case, while I don't think that the specific dangers of the Manson family are applicable to things in our real life, I do think that even if things don't seem like they're at that outrageous of a caliber,
yeah,
it's important to like
check in
and analyze what it is that attracts you to certain people, what it is that attracts you to certain lifestyles, what it is that you are running towards and what you are running from. Because even though the monotony of everyday life is suffocating, some of the things that we might do to escape it could have you suffocating someone else.
Yeah.
Or just suffocate you.
Yeah.
And that's not just in groups of people or possible cults. It's also in like relationships.
Totally.
Or in types of work.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, et cetera.
Et cetera, et cetera, et al.
Yeah.
Yeah. So while you're examining all those things.
Yeah, join our cult.
Join our cult.
Join our Patreon, patreon.com/bestmistakespod. This week we talked about Lauryn Hill.
Yeah.
We talked about 9/11.
Yeah.
We talked about...
Sex.
Sex.
We talked about a lot of Mean Girls stuff, right?
No, that was this episode.
What was the millennial stuff that we talked about on the Patreon episode?
Oh, we just talked about how if you are irrelevant to Gen Z, you're not going to get badly canceled.
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah.
So all you can hope for.
Oh, we talked about Gwyneth Paltrow.
We talk about Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yes. Which then led to us talking about Lauryn Hill and Erykah Badu.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you want to know how she connects to either of those two women.
Listen to the Patreon.
Listen to the Patreon episode, babe.
Or support us on Anchor. Yes. And if you listen to us on Spotify, you can listen to the bonus episodes on Spotify as an Anchor supporter. Leave us a review.
Please.
Send us your mistakes at bestmistakespod@gmail.com. And test your holes.
Test your drugs.
And kiss your friends on the mouth. But don't start a homicidal cult with them.
No, don't do that.
Just avoid it if you can.
Just start a normal cult.
Just start a normal cult. Just do drugs in the woods with them like everyone else. Like everyone else's cult. Be normal. I'm so sick of these damaging cults ruining the reputation for the rest
other
of
cults.
Us.
Like, my God.
Some of us are just trying to have a good time.
Jesus. With like no hierarchy.
No hierarchy, just vibes And
Amazon ordered looks.
Just support Jeff Bezos with your hard-earned money like the rest of us.
Buy your looks from Amazon and then do drugs in the woods and talk about how you're anti-capitalist.
Like a normal cult.
God, okay.
Bye.
Bye.